Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Own Your Awkward. I am very honored and excited today to have one of my best friends and my mentor here with me. This is Don Sellers. Don, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing quite well today, I think. I'm alert and ready to go.
That is a great way to be, especially when we've got you talking to the world.
So don't get to do that very often.
Yeah, it's nice when we get to get our story out there. Just to give everybody a little background, I met Don at a coffee shop. We were both there having coffee, ended up sitting next to one of those shared community tables. And Don said, why don't you join my writing group? And why don't you come with me to Toastmasters? And that was about three years ago this month. And we've kind of been side by side. Don's been my mentor in Toastmasters and business and many other areas of life. A good friend and also one of the editors of my last book and many other works I'm working on. So I owe a lot to you, Don. Thank you.
I thank you for joining Toastmasters and being part of my writing life.
It's been a fun journey. You know, it's interesting, Don, I met you, you know, when Toastmasters and writing was your focus, but you've got a lot that you've done. Every time you tell me a story, I'm amazed at all the things you've done. And so I don't know if you want to give us a quick snapshot of kind of how you got to where you're at today.
Would you please say that again?
Oh, would you like to just kind of tell us a little bit about your history and what you've done before Toastmasters?
Oh, well, in my 20s, I worked at a YMCA, and I was actually in charge of youth groups. And at the same time, I went part-time to school and eventually graduated with a degree in physics with a minor in math from Iowa State University. And I went into the Air Force at that point in time, and I chose that because I owed a bunch of money and were going to school. And by the fact, I worked two jobs while I was going to school. And I still owed a lot of money, and I knew that the military would take care of me. So I went in as a lieutenant and had quite an exciting career. And I was surprised at the diversity of things I did, but that was my choice. I'm ADD, so I like to do a lot of different things, but in that span of time, I worked on the Apollo missions. The Air Force sent me to NASA for 2 years. I worked in mission planning and helped to plan the Apollo missions. From there, I went to the Air Force Western Test Range. I worked 80 ballistic missile launches, where I helped to develop and test the MIRV system, the Minuteman III systems. Then I cross-trained aircraft maintenance, and there I eventually wound up commanding the largest squadron in the Air Force, 1,350 people. And what we did two things. We trained pilots for combat, and we also flew missions on classified avionics. And as well, I should say, the Thunderbirds are also part of that squadron.
I love the Thunderbirds.
And I also, the Air Force sent me to get a master's degree, and I worked in logistics for 6 or 7 years before I decided to retire. And from then, my life essentially has been one of volunteer work. Toastmasters, I've been Toastmasters for 38 years. This is my 38th year. I've done everything you could possibly do except to work at the international level. And I have been asked twice to run for international director, but I chose not to. And I've been writing off and on for a number of years, but not strong enough where I would have should have. I do have publications out there, but never enough where I can earn a living off of it. And maybe that's one path I could have traveled, but I didn't do it. And today I'm still a member of Toastmasters. I just stepped down from president of my local club, of which Andy is part of. And we were number one in the district in the field of 66, which I'm proud to say that's quite an accomplishment. Because in today's environment, Toastmasters is trying to rebuild itself. And I just reviewed the statistics on an international level, and not one district in Toastmasters grew. Everyone lost members. But we are an exceptional club because we survived the pandemic. We were President's Distinguished the last 6 years. And what I want to say is that this has been a teamwork by members of the club.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a series of different presidents that have steered this course and given us this honor. And this year, the new leadership team is going to work hard, try and make that 7 years in a row President's Distinguished.
Yeah, every time that bar gets raised or kept up there, it makes it a new challenge for either yourself or the next team, whoever has to deal with that.
And the very last thing is I'm president of a writers association. But I'm getting to the place where I'm 87 working on 88. And I'm just running out of energy. So I may have to tamper down some of the things I do.
Well, it's understandable. You know, the things that you've just walked us through, any one of those careers is impressive and would make for an amazing life. And you've done a lot and you're still doing a lot. And it's amazing to see. It's inspiring. I really appreciate watching what you do and how you run circles around some of the younger folks like us, where we're going, I'm trying to figure this out. And Don's just crossing things off the list. So Don, what would you say is the most positive thing you see going on in the world right now?
Right now it's at the local level. And I live in Faircrest, and there's been a lot of talk in news media about family dissolution. But we've just put in a new community center in Faircrest. And in the mornings, when I come back from coffee, I drive past the community center, and the fields, the soccer fields, the ball fields, are full of people, of kids, and they're the kids in the single digit age range, and they're out there learning soccer, learning to play softball. And this morning, Sherry and I went over for free coffee and a donut at the center, and the room we were in, there's a steady stream of people going back and forth, and there are also a large number of kids. And when we left, we looked in the basketball court. It was divided in two, and both sides there are probably 25 kids, and they're learning basketball. You know, things you learn about when you play basketball. And the tennis courts are also full of kids with older folks helping out. And the people helping out were a mixture of young and elderly, female and male. So that says everybody is involved. And I think what's happening is people are trying to strengthen the family at the local level.
Yeah, that's a really good insight, because we see all these global problems that we try to tackle and solve, But real change starts with the people that we interact with every day. And at first, it's our family and then our closest friends. And if we can start kids out teaching them those values, that's going to create a stronger world.
Well, they're also take care of seniors. Where we went, they have 3 days a week. They have free donuts and coffee for seniors.
Oh, nice.
So we went over and sat down and talked with some of the other seniors there, and then I had to get back, so we left at 9:30, so I'd be prepared for this podcast.
Ah, well, I hate to pull you away from free donuts and coffee, but I'm glad you were able to get over there and visit and take advantage of the community. So, Don, the world is ready to know. We want to hear what's your awkward thing you've had to own in order to live your best life?
Oh, well, first of all, I think in thinking about your request, I really have two, but I'm only going to dwell on one. And the first is ADHD.
Okay.
And that did delay my development. And the other is a hearing impediment that goes along with ADHD. 40 to 60% of people with ADHD have a disability. One is associated with reading. And that's dyslexia, and one of my daughters did have this, was dyslexic for a while. And the other is with hearing. And I think it's genetic. It's in my right ear, and two of my brothers have the same thing. And it means that if you look at a full range like this, my range in my left ear is something like this all my life. But I didn't know that until I
Yeah.
started reading about ADD. And figured it out. So, but I'm just going to talk about the hearing problem, because it has been significant, but I never knew it
Yeah.
because I just did not know it. The hearing test I went through didn't just said you just said you have a problem with your right ear, and that was it, nothing else.
And those kind of things are hard for us to determine because if it's something sensory like vision or hearing, I got glasses when I was probably 20, and until that time I didn't know that I wasn't seeing at a full level. You don't know the difference because what you see seems perfect because it's all you've ever seen or heard.
Yeah, well, yeah, let's go back to my 20s when I would hear something and somebody would say, I seen this, but what I would hear is, I mean this.
Oh.
So I have to go back into my brain, to my mind, and figure out, well, that doesn't seem right, that what they really mean is this. So I lose part of the conversation already. And in later years, when I was being tested, an audiologist said, you probably have some unformed nerve endings connected with your right ear that doesn't allow you to process what you hear correctly.
Yeah. Now,
So let's.
do you remember when you first realized how much of an issue the hearing was?
I didn't. That's good. Good. That's a good question. I don't think I really recognized it until maybe 20 years ago when I used to hang out at Barnes and Noble, and I used to meet people with mental illness. And so I'd be reading about schizophrenia, PTSD. And one day when I was back in the book stacks, I saw this huge long row of ADD, ADHD. So I thought, hey, that's an issue. I'll read it. I picked out a book called Driven to Distractions, opened it up. They had a list of 20 symptoms. I fit 18 out of 20.
Oh,
And
wow.
maybe those two. I think the reason why I didn't earlier, I just figured everybody else was like this. And I just survived by, well, it did cause a lot of what you would call awkward moments, when I was not privy to the conversations. I sat outside of them. I didn't know what was being said. And I would have to ask somebody, what did they say? But that's an awkward moment. And we talk about now, I can go like to a nightclub, and Sherry will be sitting on one side, and a friend will be sitting on the other side. They sit me in the middle because they know I am hard of hearing, and they think that I hear them. And they'll be talking the whole time, and I don't know a word. I don't. I'm serious. I don't know even know a word they're saying. A word. And that's an awkward moment for me.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you mentioned when you found this book, Driven to Distraction, and I don't know if the listeners and viewers are doing the math here, but you said that was about 20 years ago. So you were in your late 60s when you even
Yes.
realized this was part of your life.
Yes.
You had already coped for so
And
long.
I've read 8.5 books since then on ADHD.
Okay.
And did not even recognize, well, I would talk about ADHD when in my 20s, I would run all the time. And even when I was just walking downtown to get something, I would walk for a while, then run, walk for a while, then run. People thought I was crazy. You're talking, they look at you like, and that's awkward.
Yeah.
It's awkward. And at night, some nights I would get out, just get out in this. At the YMCA and just run sprints. My legs wouldn't stop.
You needed to get the energy out.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you happen to remember when you finished that test with the 20 questions? And if I'm hearing you right, you bought the book to help understand other people, not necessarily yourself.
No, mostly, no, actually, mostly with myself.
Okay.
But it does lead to understanding other people.
Okay.
And more, there are more people with ADD than we realize. Well, that's a hard question to answer. I think when you are with ADD, you go to organizations and do things where you meet people with ADD. I think that they say that 10% of the population is ADD.
Okay.
That's the lot. I haven't done much reading lately about ADD, so that's where it stands. It's a brand new science, brand new field of study, lots of things going on. It's not a mental illness. It's just the way your brain is built.
Yeah, and that's one thing we forget is that there are a lot of things that can get in the way of working in normal confines, but it's because those confines are built for a certain structure. And we have a lot of people in the world who think differently, who thrive in a different way. And
Right.
it's not that they can't thrive, it's that they're going to thrive outside of the confines of what they've been put into.
But it's talk about awkward moments is when we're driving. Sherry's driving. She normally speaks to the windshield, which she
Oh,
thinks I hear,
yes.
and I don't. And I go, yeah.
Uh-oh,
If I
careful
really
what
don't.
you're agreeing to.
Yeah, I really don't know what she said. She has to turn toward me and speak.
Yeah.
Now, how good question to ask is how can people help out? Well, they can with three things. One is volume. The second is enunciation. And the third is pacing. Now,
Okay.
I give you an example of that. The last Toastmaster meeting, and I was sitting near the front. If I was sitting near the back, I don't know if that would be the case or not. But two of the speakers had the right volume, enunciated, and pacing was excellent. There were two, I couldn't even tell you what they spoke about.
Yeah, so essentially, you're sitting in silence during that time,
Yes,
as
I'm a,
far as what
yeah,
you're hearing.
I hear garbled words is what I hear.
Yeah.
It and that's that, even when I have hearing aids on, that's true.
So, how do you find that you can make them own that and make the most of the situation. Have you found that there's things you can do ahead of time to help avoid those situations or put yourself in a place where you can get ahead of that?
But in Toastmasters, I can, if I'm an evaluator, I can ask people for a copy of their speech or a outline. And you see, that's a problem with Toastmasters because in the evaluator, I can't hear.
Oh, sure.
And so all I do is talk about what I see. There may be one or two things I do here. No, there's not too much. It's like last night we had a Zoom meeting with our daughters. We have one every week, and several times I had to say to Stephanie, "Could you please repeat?" I had to do it again. "Could you please repeat?" And we're sitting right, like right now, and that's that. I've gotten used to it, but that's and they know I'm so well. So now they say, "Well, he's hard of hearing," but not realizing this extends back to the past, a long ways into the past. And so sometimes when I now one of the things you're going to ask is, "Do you own your awkward?" Well, if I go back and I look at my track, yes, I own my awkward. But it's not because I did, they just it's because of little things I did along the way. I mean, can you imagine sitting in a meeting with the commander and he says some things, you don't know what he said, you leave, and you have to find out from somebody else what he said. It's and still survive. And not only do that, but do some top-notch jobs along the way.
Right, because it doesn't sound like this has held you back in any way.
Well, I wonder what my life would have been like if I didn't have, especially the hearing problem.
Sure. So how did you, when you would leave those meetings and you have instructions that you might not know what they are, how would you find those answers?
Sometimes, if I've been in the organization for a while, I know what the answers would be. If I'm new, then I don't. And sometimes I've just let it ride, and other times I find out by asking the right questions of the right people.
Well, and I would imagine that that journey of having to go on those investigations after the fact developed other skills that you may not have developed if you didn't have to go on that search.
Yes, I read people very well, and I think that stems from that. And I think that's one of the reasons why I've been successful in Toastmasters is because I read people very well. When I look, when I talked about owning the awkwards. When I look back on my life, just between 90 and 95% of the things I've touched have been successful. And the other 5 to 10% is because I things were outside of my control. I could I there's nothing I could do to make things work.
Well, and that's, I think maybe it was 6 months or a year ago, you had challenged me to write down every success you've had or list 100 successes in life. And when you think back, it's as simple as learning how to walk, learning how to speak the language you speak, learning how to dial a telephone. We have so much success in our life, but when we set the bar really high, we keep seeing that we're missing the bar, but we're not always looking at all the things we've learned along the way.
Right.
Now you said you opened up that book in Barnes and Noble, and I'm really curious about when you took that test. How did you feel when you found that you had 18 out of 20 of those answers.
I was overwhelmed. I couldn't believe it. Is this really true? Surprise, right? I bought the book right away and started reading it. That's my recollection of how, what I felt at the time. I guess I really felt kind of strange. Just really, is that true? I fit 18 of 20.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because when we see things that the way a lot of times issues that people deal with are positioned as someone who's going to struggle and not have success because they have X, Y, or Z, name whatever the issue is. So to be in a position where you've already had a very successful career, already retired from one, taken on the next one, doing well in that, and then to see that there's this thing that you've been dealing with the whole time, have you been able to look back and see where you made adjustments along the way to cope with it?
No, I think that the adjustments I've been made have been the same adjustments all along.
Sure.
It's hard for me to sit there and pull something out to talk about. I just think they are part of I was going to say, I think one of the reasons is one, it's hard for me to make friends, and I think part of it is because of I don't I it's hard for me to engage in conversation unless they're sitting in front of me, and I don't know if I read lips or not.
That's a good question. Somebody was just talking about reading lips the other day, and I can't imagine being able to have that skill. But I think there's a level of observation that we take in when we're watching someone speak, whether we're purely looking at their lips or just their facial expression, to be able to understand their intention.
Yes.
Yeah. Now with your hearing, I know you've shared with me that it's not about just the level of hearing, it's about the way it processes the hearing.
Yes.
So volume doesn't always help. Like you said, you could hear the word and process it differently to a new meaning, and so that can create some.
That and pacing helps out there.
Okay.
One of my daughters, Kathy, she speaks really fast, still speaks fast. And I remember back in my 50s when I talked over the telephone, I couldn't understand her. I'd have to ask her to slow down, and then she would slow down. But she does not just, even then, I still had problems.
Have you found that communicating through Zoom has helped it with some of the dialogue?
Oh, well, I'll tell you why it helps, because I'm wearing
Ah.
earphones. Earphones helps a lot because I think it's a single source. The volume is good, but if you still do not enunciate the pace well, I will have trouble.
Okay.
I've got, well, like this, I've got no outside sources coming in to just distract me.
Right. So
Now, has a, I don't know that, if the hearing problem, my daughters have a hearing problem, but just in our telephone conversation yet last night, Stephanie said, I really have no problem with distractions. I can't think because of all the distractions.
interesting.
Yes. She's the one that she is the one who has the I thought, that's why I thought, has the strongest ADD symptoms. But Kathy has tested for ADD. She is ADD, and her daughter is also ADD.
Okay. Well, and I imagine that's a bit of a gift to know younger in life in order to be able to be successful with it if you know what you're dealing with.
Yes, it helps. Yes,
Now, if you,
she's successful.
knowing what you know now, what would you go back and tell 20-year-old Don about how to manage and make things happen in life?
I think the best knowledge is simply just to be aware. Because if you're in a busy situation with a high noise level, and you've got people talking on both sides of you that you're supposed to be listening to, you might not be able to understand what they say. Maybe. I do not have the problems I've got now when I was younger, although I had some of the problems. But it's just like I heard somebody say, I've seen this, you hear, I mean this. And also, but also at that same level, when somebody would tail off in volume, I might not be able to hear.
Okay.
And that was true with songs. When you listen to music, a lot of the singers really trail off in volume at the last, and I don't know what they say.
And unfortunately, sometimes the big point is at the end, or the last thing they want to leave us with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we don't always realize the importance of how we're projecting our voice, how we are adjusting our speech as we go through a conversation, and it makes a big difference.
Yes, it does. It's I think that especially what the disability I'm talking about now is that if well, let me go back and say something that's really helped. My eyes are super good. I never had cataracts or glaucoma in my age at 87, and the last time I didn't have any, but you need to come in on an annual basis now so we can check because you're getting up in years, so got to do that. And also my native intelligence is pretty strong, and I think that's helped. When I've tested my lowest aptitude area was math and physics and logic, which on a average of 100, 125, everything else is one between 140 and 144. So I have some strong abilities that help me to work through these awkward moments, so that when I'm talking to you about awkward moments, I can't bring something out and say, "Boy, this is really awkward." But it's been little bits of awkward all along the way,
Well,
and yeah, it's not been a steady. It's been a steady course, but it's been a jagged course.
okay. Not one major jarring event
Yeah. Well,
that
not one major. No. I haven't. I'm trying to think of one major jarring event that strongly affected me or my career, and I can't think of one right offhand.
Well, one thing that I don't know if our listeners picked up on, you said your lowest aptitude was math and physics
Right.
and logic.
Yes.
What was your master's in?
No, not my master's,
Or your
undergraduate.
degree, your undergraduate. It was in math and physics, wasn't it?
I think I had to prove to myself that I could do it. Otherwise, with my weakest areas, those are the ones that I concentrate on. It's like sports. I never was, when I was not as good as everybody else, a lot of it was because I was smaller. So, but I started playing basketball a lot. And I became eventually in my 20s very good. I would have, when I played at the gyms, most of the players there were black, and I had blacks who wouldn't guard
The good players wouldn't guard you, huh?
me. They just could not. But they liked playing with me. I had one time I was a major. This was in my 30s, and some black guy, some new kid. I hadn't seen him before. He was an airman first class. And he started guarding me. He said, "You know, white guy, you're going to show me up." So I walked off the court because I'm a major. He's an airman first class. Any kind of a problem, I'm the one who's going to be take the blame. So I
Yeah.
walked off the court.
Yeah, probably a good course of action just to avoid any conflict.
So yeah. So anyway, I never saw him again.
So you found that you naturally seem to take the thing that
In my master's,
huh?
in my master's degree, was in logistics, and the Air Force sent me to get it. And I was a major at the time, so that meant they paid for everything. I had housing, still had my major salary. They paid for the tuition, books, everything. Nothing came out of my pocket. That was also the year my dad died, and I had missed a couple of weeks of school because of that. And that affected my GPA a little bit, but I still graduated. And I also had my partner. He went through a divorce and he just quit. So anyway, that's another story. We don't want to go there.
No, it's fair, but I do find that it's amazing how you take those things that you could see, whether it's height with basketball or science and math with learning, and turn those into challenges to see just how far you could take those.
This is an awkward moment. Would you please repeat what you said?
No, I find it's amazing that you took those things that were most challenging, like your level of math and science, and turned them into challenges to see how far you could take them.
Well, I do too, and I think it's because, like I said earlier, I think I had to prove myself. Subconsciously, I don't think it was a conscious decision. Just I had to prove myself. I think I want to mention one more thing, but about going to undergraduate and graduate classes, I could go into a lecture and walk out not knowing what was said. I mean that, not knowing what was said, and if they didn't have some written backup, I was hurting.
Now you are probably the most prolific reader that I know. D between the magazines, the books, you always have reading material in your hand. And I would wonder, do you think, there you go. See? Would you, he's got, he, and if you're listening, Don just held up a magazine. He's reading right now. So Don, would you say that that was something you developed, your reading, in order to seek that knowledge that you might not have been able to hear?
It might very well be, but when I was in high school, junior high, grade school, I seldom read, not like I do now. And I did start reading when I was in undergraduate school. Yeah, and it probably because of that, but I started reading, and then I stopped reading again when I was in the military. Because I had a family, and the jobs I had usually took more than 8 hours a day to do. So, yes, you're right. What is interesting, though, if you want me to continue with this,
Definitely.
is that when I was in second grade, my dad left a magazine on the floor, and it was a science fiction magazine. And I read one story in there when I was that grade, and I understood it. And it was a story about about mining on Jupiter. And I understood this. I don't understand why. So now I thought later years, well, that's just a bunch of crap. That really didn't happen. Imagine it. So when I'm a junior in high school, in the winter months, a lot of snow on the ground, I stop in at the library, and they've got this science fiction mag on the rack. I open it up, and there's the story.
Wow.
I thought, wow. And not only that, one of the Star Trek stories later on, they also had a similar story.
Okay.
So I don't understand. And also, when I was in first grade, the lady next door would give me something to eat if I would read something out of the newspaper.
Mm.
And I would read a story out of the newspaper to her.
Okay.
Now, I don't know where I learned to read. My memory doesn't tell me that. But it does tell me that she would get, I remember her letting me lick the macaroni cheese pan.
Oh.
I read a story where I learned to do this, I don't know, but those memories are with me. I don't know if the one with the lady next door is true or not, because that's a single memory, but I do know the memory picking up that magazine and reading it, that's true, because I saw it later in later years.
Yeah, I've had some memories from my past that I've asked a couple of my siblings about to clarify, is this something I remember or developed in my head versus did that really happen? Because we have memories, and then they almost kind of like legends are developed. We tell the story to ourselves in a way to explain where we came from. And then later we can look back and go, did that really happen?
And well, my mind may have developed along these lines with you, the eyesight and remembering things to compensate for the loss of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
That enables you to survive.
Definitely. And I would almost wonder if that has developed your passion for, number one, Toastmasters and speaking to be able to communicate clearly to others, and also your passion for writing.
Probably, yes. I've belonged to other organizations like Masons, Alliance, Elks, and I quit after 1 or 2 years because this wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But joining Toastmasters and writing groups is those kinds of things work for me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to be in both of the groups that I'm in with you, with PAWA and the Plateau Area Writers Association, and with Toastmasters. Both things bring out different sides of your talents, your skills, and really highlight the experience you have. Now, before we go, I've got people on sometimes that have things that they're promoting and that they want the world to know about. What would you want the world to be doing to support your causes and what you have going on in the world right now?
I thought about that a long time, because this is a question that you said that would be asked. And I just thought a very short sentence. This sentence could be attributed to your own life, family's life, the organization to which you belong, to the nation, and it works with the theme on awkwardness, because it smooths out the path, and that is steady as she goes.
Mm.
Steady as she goes. And that probably is a good description of my life, because probably some of the awkward moments I've had, by keeping it steady as she goes, coming back from those awkward moments. And that's sometimes that's hard to do. To come back from those awkward moments, you have to let some time slip by. And then, but you come back and keep on going steady as she goes.
I really love that saying, and I hadn't thought about it until just now when you said it in this light, how critical that is for life, because it's a very relaxing saying that kind of takes that stress out of overreacting to overcompensate. Just stay steady, stay calm, and come back to where you want to be.
Right. You said it better than I did. Thank you.
Well, no, I was, it's what I heard you say. So, but I love that. Well, Don, what would be the advice you would give others on how they can own their awkward?
Knowledge. See, I never knew about my awkwards until I picked up the knowledge. Now, how do you get knowledge? One is by reading, and it's by, there are a lot of temptations in society today, and technology has given us all those temptations. Video games, for example. We have people whose lives are video games, movies. There's so much going on that it's hard to focus, and what you need to focus on is to make your life better. And I think that reading, actually, you can, even on the computer, you can find things that pertain to your awkward. If you know you've got a problem and you have awkward moments, explore it. Knowledge and exploration, you have to know before you can react to it. I couldn't react to mine until I knew. And that's even in spite of the fact that I read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And still had not really thought about those things that influenced my life until I knew about them.
Wow. That's powerful, because we can be seeking knowledge but not find the right knowledge or not find the right things. So we have to continually explore.
Well, listen to your friends. Listen to people around you.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody ever spoke to me about being hard of hearing. And when I was ADHD, nobody ever spoke to me about being ADHD.
Mm.
Of course, the ADD was in its infancy then.
Sure, yeah. It's come a long way. There's a lot more awareness now than there definitely was 20 years ago, especially for adults.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Well, Don, you have continued to impart a lot of wisdom on me, not just today, but continually. I appreciate you, appreciate everything that you have shared today. It's always amazing to hear another side and more of someone's story and their journey, and I really appreciate that.
Well, I've enjoyed every moment of this. Thank you for asking.
Thank you very much. We look forward to having this be out there and helping the world to explore their awkward. Thank you very much, Don. Everybody else, thank you. And be sure to comment, share, like, subscribe, do all those things so your friends can also know what's going on, and so that we can give Don some love in the world here for opening up and sharing his awkward. And as always, make sure you own your awkward. Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.